You ready?
Ready.
Here we go. All right. Welcome, colleagues. Today is February 5th, 2018. It's a few minutes after 3 o'clock, and we're going to open up the Joint Committee on Ways and Means Subcommittee on General Government. In a moment, colleagues, we're going to move into an informational meeting where we have an opportunity to hear from the Department of Revenue and our Director, Nia Ray. We're glad you're here, Madam Director. And we'll also be hearing from Katie Koba, our Director of Department of Administrative Services. And Director Koba, we're glad you're here. Really quick before we begin, because we're kicking off the start of our February session, if each of you could just take a moment and introduce yourself for the record so those citizens who may be listening in know a little bit more about us. So we'll start on the Senate side. Senate DeBoer, if you'd just take a moment and introduce yourself to the thousands and thousands of constituents from your district listening to this subcommittee today.
Alan DeBoer, Senator from District 3, which is Ashland, Talent, Phoenix, parts most of Medford, Jacksonville, and surrounding areas.
I'm Betsy Johnson. I represent Senate District 16, which is Northwest Oregon, Tillamook, Columbia, Clatsop, a little Multnomah, and a little Washington County.
Senator James Manning, excuse me, co-chair, represent District 7, which is North and West Eugene, Junction City, and all that beautiful agricultural community in between.
Welcome. Mr. Borden, you have to introduce yourself.
Please.
No, go. I want to hear about you.
John Borden, Legislative Fiscal Office. Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair.
You do an A-plus job. All right. I'm Greg Smith, representing District 57, the very best parts of Umatilla County, Morrow County, Gillum County, Sherman County, and the best parts of Wasco County, including Port of Umatilla, Port of Morrow, Port of Arlington, Big Junction, and the Port of the Dalles. Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I'm David Gomberg from House District 10. Happy to say hello to our worldwide listening audience. House District 10 is on the Central Oregon coast. I represent from Yahats to Tillamook and inland as far as Sheridan and Falls City.
And I'm State Representative Mike Nierman from House District 23, and I describe myself as the State Representative from 99W.
Good afternoon. I'm Julie Fahey from House District 14, which is West Eugene and Junction City.
Welcome. And Michael, you don't get off the hook. You don't have a microphone, but introduce yourself.
Michael Graham. I am the assistant to this subcommittee.
And you do an awesome job.
Welcome
Thank
back.
You for all you do. So, colleagues, today we're going to go through an informational meeting, and in a moment, I'm going to turn this over to John. I would just share with everyone just very, very quickly. In the past, there were some outstanding issues with the Department of Revenue, and the Department of Revenue has done a really, really good job being proactive and working with this committee, trying to find that path it wants to take to move forward. And so as we visit today, I would ask that we frame our questions in a way of being proactive and helpful and supportive, knowing that as we work towards maximum efficiency within this agency, at some point in time we can build in accountability pieces. But I feel Director Ray's done just an excellent job in being forthcoming and upfront with us, and we want to do everything we can to be supportive. So I'm hoping that can be the tone of today's committee hearing. So, John, I'm going to turn it over to you to walk through what our plan is for today.
Good afternoon, Mr. Co-Chair, members of the subcommittee. Today, there's a daily agenda, which you'll see for the rest of this session. And the agenda will be just an informational hearing today on these particular items. But first, the agency director will start off with just an overview framing of some of the things you'll be hearing and some of the issues they're working on currently. And then on Wednesday, we will Paul Siebert will be in with a couple DAS items. And then these two items will be work sessioned, and then there will be an informational hearing on a related budget request, Mr. Co-Chair. And then just for everyone's information, OLIS does have postings of the various reports that you'll be receiving for today are currently available. So thank you, Mr. Co-Chair.
Perfect. All right. Thank you, John. So Director Ray, come on up, and then the floor is yours. So feel free to invite whoever you would like to join you.
Thank you.
Mr. Co-Chair, if I may, the last time we heard from the Department of Revenue, the director was out sick. It's good to see her back and on her feet.
Chair Smith, Chair Manning, members of the committee, I'm Nia Ray, the director of the Oregon Department of Revenue. I have with me Director Katie Koba as well. Sorry, I didn't mean to take your thunder there. DAS and DOR are prepared today to share with you the results of two budget notes, both of which required DAS oversight. As the agenda reflects, the first budget note for today's discussion requires a review of the DOR's alignment with state accounting and budget processes. The second will refer to a review of our personnel practices and how well we manage legislatively authorized positions. The department received nine budget notes, one of which we shared with you last November on our readiness for the 2018 tax processing seasons. Over the next few days, we will report on three of the remaining six budget notes and request funds for two departmental policies. Before we move into the substance of our presentations, I'd like to remind this committee that you did set clear expectations for the department that we increase the level of legislative communication with respect to our internal needs. In addition to assisting you with understanding our operations, I hope our delivery today supports our intent to foster a higher level of communication and bridge the communication divide. The reports today will illustrate that we have some work to do in certain areas, but we acknowledge that, we own that, and have already begun to address several of the areas requiring correction. Over the next year, the department will implement three new tax programs that you heard a bit about a few weeks ago, two new collection tools, and any administrative adjustments required due to federal tax reform. The department will also develop a departmental performance management system and be party to several external audits, including a culture audit by the Secretary of State. Finally, we will...
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Yeah. Senator.
I heard the words. I don't know what those mean. A culture audit. That I know fiscal. I know performance. That's a new one.
Chairman, members of the committee, Senator, we're learning as well. I think without speaking for the Secretary of State, they are in the process of understanding what's expected from a culture audit and creating a path toward not only meeting the objectives of the legislature and the Secretary of State, but also enriching the department through a culture audit. We have had preliminary discussions about what such an audit would look like. I'm a bit reluctant to share any of that because we're the auditee and it's their plan, and I'm not sure where they are in the process of finalizing that, but I will say that culture audits are certainly new to Oregon. I think nationwide there isn't much precedent for culture audits, and if there is, it isn't directed towards state government. So we're working through that process.
Mr. Chair, respectfully, I understand the director whose agency will be subject to such an audit, her reluctance to comment. Ms. Koba, could you help us? I mean, is this to see, is this a happy place to work? Is this, what's the diversity profile look like? I don't understand what value added it will bring.
Mr. Co-Chair, Senator Johnson, I probably don't have a lot more information to share than what Director Ray has already given you. This is a Secretary of State audit. As I understand it, it falls under their performance audit kind of area, but it is a performance audit to come in and review the culture of the agency. Typically, when the state auditor comes in, initially they spend some time trying to scope their audit, so, and that may be the phase that they're still in, is to really figure out what the scope of this audit will be.
So maybe it's incumbent upon us to be asking the Secretary of State what his intentions are with a cultural audit.
Well, I just come from an audit committee meeting, and so this is fresh in my mind. And if it is as simple as numerically adding up the diversity, that'd be pretty simple. if I know the agency in the past has had some union management friction. I'm trying to figure out if that's it. Mm-hmm. Being the state's tax collector, almost de facto, maybe not the happiest place on earth. And so I'm just trying to figure out, we're going to be spending energy and time and personnel to go in and do this work. I'm just trying to figure out, what are we buying? And what does it tell us at the end? We are the tax collectors. We take a lot of grief from citizens. Our phone operators are overwhelmed by grumpy taxpayers. The nature of the work is, you guys have your hand in Oregonians' pockets. I'm really struggling to understand this one.
So, Mr. Co-Chair, I do think that would be, if you want to explore that further, it really is more under the realm of the Secretary of State's chief auditor.
I would share with you, Senator, if you don't mind, if the co-chair is okay with it, why don't you let the co-chair and I inquire into the Secretary of State what their intent is.
I'm perfectly happy to have that.
We'll report back.
Sure.
Okay, John. Oh, please continue.
Okay. Cultural audit from the Secretary of State. Finally, we will implement recommendations from the various budget notes, including the two budget notes that we'll discuss with you today. So the first budget note for discussion requires a comprehensive review of our finance management and accounting practices and how those practices align with statewide budgeting systems and associated processes. The review was required to be conducted by DAS, with DOR and DAS jointly reporting the findings. And this is where I defer to Director Koba to provide the results and the recommendations from that review.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. For the record, Katie Koba, Chief Operating Officer and Director of DAS. Just to highlight again of the budget note, the Department of Revenue, under the direction of DAS, is directed to undertake a comprehensive review of the department's accounting practices and statewide financial management application structure and its alignment with the Oregon Budget Information Tracking System. The review is also to include the Department of Revenue's cost allocation system. So we are here today to jointly report back on that review. Our chief financial office was charged with leading the financial review. And I think it's important to stress that before, during, multiple times, and now, the Chief Financial Office coordinated very closely with the Legislative Fiscal Office staff. So in the beginning, we worked with LFO staff to define the scope of the review. We laid out who we were recommending would actually conduct the review and what would be included in the report. We assembled a review team made up of individuals from a number of different state agencies that have experience in accounting, budgeting, and cost allocation. And this team spent 8 weeks interviewing Department of Revenue staff and management, reviewing documents and processes, and working side by side with Department of Revenue staff to understand how they do their jobs. The team also spent time with the revenue's executive team and, again, periodically checked in with DAS, Chief Financial Office, and LFO during this process. We did come out with a series of observations and recommendations that we've provided now to the Department of Revenue and to LFO, and that report is posted on OLIS. And I think it's important to note that during the full review, we had the Department of Revenue's full cooperation. They were very honest with us, and I think, as Director Ray had indicated, they are now moving into the implementation mode in terms of the findings from the recommendations. Just wanted to highlight a few of the recommendations. One area of opportunity is for the department to simplify how it's basically its cost allocation system. So to simplify how it accounts for staff time and other expenses, reducing their accounting workload. A second recommendation, the department has experienced a lot of turnover in this area, and there is a general lack of documentation for new staff to get up to speed. So developing, you know, some onboarding material and basically process manuals for new staff, process and procedure manuals for new staff. And then a third highlight was for the department to identify and fill key budget and accounting positions that had been left vacant. And I think they will be addressing this with you later during this month. I think, again, our review was focused on looking at the immediate issues at the agency, get them ready for budget development for the coming biennium. The agency's budget bill also provided funding for an external financial audit, and those auditors will probably come in and take a look at our review and recommendations, and that will help them guide their next steps moving down the road in the department. So with that, I think I turn it back over to Nia. Again, I think the review was honest and came up with some areas for improvement, and I feel very confident that the department is taking those recommendations and fully committed to moving forward.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Andrew.
I'm sorry, what's going to be the process for tracking the recommendations? Will that be owned by DAS, or will that be owned by the department? How do we know when something goes in the done column?
Mr. Co-Chair and Senator Johnson, and I know Nia will want to respond to this as well. The ball is back in the Department of Revenue's court, so they're going to be the primary right now. But I can tell you, and it gets a little bit back, although you were the only one on the previous committee, you know, our whole goal is to ensure that our state agencies are successful. So both DAS and LFO are not going to say, here you go, goodbye. We will be checking in regularly with the department, as I'm sure will this committee, as you proceed through this short session and as you look at their budget and review their activities starting in the long session in February of 19.
And one other question. I have the sense, and I'm begging to be corrected if I'm wrong, I have the sense that the review and the engagement with the legislature is largely reactionary to existing problems. Comment, if you would, and maybe you're going to touch on this, Ms. Ray, in your presentation, about what prophylactic steps are being taken to avoid the kinds of issues that are existent and have existed at the agency. I'm trying to see what lessons can be learned from this so that we can put in the preventative measures rather than racing into cleanup after the house is already on fire.
Chairs, members of the committee, first to your initial concern, if I may, Senator, the department has grouped all of the recommendations into three categories. The first being the immediate, those that can result in immediate resolution. The second is a short-term category, those that are able to be resolved in 6 to 12 months. And the final is a more of a heavier lift, your long-term solutions that will require in excess of 12 months. With respect to that plan of action, we will be communicating both with this body, DAS, through the CFO and LFO, as we work through those processes and as we check those boxes. The heavier lifts, for example, the cost allocation system, it is a heavy lift, and that will require frequent communication with LFO, not only in a reporting sort of check-in with a check-in sort of relationship, but as we devise methods to correct some of the practices, we will certainly seek input from the LFO, and definitely the CFO will be instrumental in ensuring that we're meeting the objectives. As far as, you know, a reactionary approach to our communication, that is an issue. And what the common theme in all of these recommendations and reports is that there needs to be an increase in communication, the level of communication between LFO and CFO when issues arise. And even from a more perfunctory, regular standpoint, just to check in to make sure that we're all on the same page. And so I don't have anything beyond that, but the intent is not only to communicate more frequently and clearly with this body, but through the food chain as well.
Mr. Chair, if you'll allow me, one takeaway from last committee meeting, I hope that the recommendations are more nuanced than just give us more money. I'm looking for leadership both from DAS as sort of the mother of all agencies as well as individual agency directors to say, these are our recommendations based on close observation about, in your case, intermediate, short-term, and long-term. And it shouldn't be just the parsimonious legislature is making us perform badly because you don't give us enough money. We're in a perhaps a difficult financial situation where money isn't going to be the fix for a lot of these problems. So I'm looking for leadership from the agencies and DAS to say, here's what we can do with what we've got.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, understood, Senator.
Thank you.
John.
Mr. Co-Chair, members of the subcommittee, and Senator Johnson, one key aspect of these findings that you'll see in the LFO recommendations is tomorrow or on Wednesday is that the agency's internal audit function needs to be fine-tuned and optimized so that it can see some of these issues in advance and the agency can take care of them. Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair, members of the committee.
Yeah, thank you, John. And I'd point out to the committee members, as we have this conversation, there's some good stuff here in OLIS. The financial review report and the personal practices review report that really spells out exactly what we're talking about. So while we're kind of getting an overview from the directors, the detail is right here, and that's good information. Mm-hmm. So why don't we continue if we can?
Chairs, members of the committee, the priority is to certainly work through each of these recommendations. But before, you know, we can seek the type of resolution to these issues that you expect and that we desire, we need to hire a permanent administrator. We recently, our ASD administrator moved on, and we have an interim solution right now who has done outstanding work for the past 2 months that he's been in the position. However, it's interim. The DAS CHRO has reviewed the position and recommended that we reclassify that position. And so we will be seeking that reclassification from you, funding toward that reclassification from you, and have through the budget request. So with that, there will be an ask, but we do believe that it's a critical ask in order to move this forward. So if there aren't any other questions, we'll move to the second budget note. Madeline Zeik, the chief human.
Actually, really quick, I do have a question, and if it's gonna be discussed in the future here today, please don't hesitate to tell me that. As I'm reading through the letter on January 12th, 2018, it's talking about the budget note regarding the financial management of the agency. And one of the recommendations, as I read down on page 3, it talks about understaffing, that in the budget and accounting units, there's been a high turnover without effective knowledge transfer. And I get that issue. I think that's a major issue throughout all of state government. I'm going to throw this out there. I've been talking to LFO about this. Have we looked at internship opportunities to start bringing in new workforce members and giving them a taste of state government, knowing that we may be able to grab them in the future? And without nepotism here at all, I want to be up front. My son's a second-year law student. Is dying to figure out how to learn state revenue issues, but he has no clue how to get into that system, knowing he still has 1 year of law school. And so how do we attract those type of men and women who could be a future resource for the state of Oregon? How do we grab them, knowing that we can't have them all today, but we may get them in the future?
So, Mr. Co-Chair, you've hit the nail on the head on an issue that's really important to me, and that is the workforce of the future for state government. Who are they? What do they look like? How do we compete with other employers in the state? And certainly in this economic environment, we are struggling to fill critical positions. When I came in, we did start up. The state of Oregon has had agency by agency, you know, free to bring in interns. I know the Department of Transportation, as an example, has a really excellent internship program, but it's been agency by agency by agency. And so DAS last summer kicked off a pilot internship program to bring in a group of and it was targeted at college students and not just young ones. I can remember talking to a gentleman who served in the military and has come back and is getting his master's and was an intern in our program. So you're exactly right. That was a group of about 30. The pilot was very successful. I think it is fair to say that was a summer internship, so there is a challenge trying to find the right fit, sure, you know, for meaningful work for them in that period of time. And I think we're thinking about ways to actually make that program longer. So that's what's being done on the enterprise level. I'm not familiar to know if Revenue has their own internship program, but I think this is something we will continue to look at and invest in.
Well, without digressing too far away, this subcommittee's general government, you know, and workforce throughout the state of Oregon is a topic we should care about. And so if you could get me more information on, sure, that, how that pilot program worked, how it might be modified, what recommendations you would have for us collectively, I'd be interested in that. We could pass that on to the committee. Senator?
Mr. Chair, just to follow up, and this does go back to more money. When you said the ODOT program had done well, I would love to see the evidence of that. I know right now that ODOT is struggling in Region 1 to fill project manager slots. Right. And we are competing with Caltrans that is able to offer more money. We gave them 36 positions to fill earlier. I don't know how many of those 36 they've filled. They're coming back and asking for 155 or 56, whatever it is. But I don't know how we're building a bench, and seeing the demonstration of how ODOT did would be great. But I'm hearing from contractors that they can't get projects out the door because there just simply are no project managers.
Mr. Co-Chair, Senator Johnson, I would say in this economic environment right now, that's absolutely true. Right. We will struggle all throughout state government, not just in the Department of Transportation, in trying to get people to come work for the state. Despite what some people think, we are not as competitive from a compensation standpoint. And frankly, you know, for younger people, state government is not what they're aspiring to work in. Typically, our workforce it's their second, third, fourth job coming into state government.
One other question. Either you or Director Ray mentioned a high turnover at Department of Revenue. Are exit interviews being conducted? And I'm looking over your shoulder at HR folks. I would be quite curious to see if themes are emerging, apropos our conversation about the cultural review, assuming that that speaks to the question of job satisfaction. I'd like to know, as people are turning in their paperwork, what's it telling us?
Chairs, members of the committee, in this limited universe, with respect to our finance section, there have been exit interviews, and
I understand
what was.
We don't either.
Gumberg wanted to see how his worked out.
There have been exit interviews at the very least. I know there have been exit interviews at the leadership level, and the common theme really is reflected in the recommendations. There's been a lack of training at the lower levels, which makes it very difficult to manage at the higher levels. Skills are either disseminated through continued leadership and consistent leadership, or through training. And so what we found through the peer review is that, number one, we have to increase our level of training, ensure that the training that they have meets the MQs and allows them to meet the basic MQs if they don't have them. And then finally, we have to really maintain the level of leadership at the top to disseminate the information that they have so that we do have a skilled workforce at every level. So, you know, it's hard to manage a unit that struggles, and it's hard to be in a unit and respond to leadership when you don't necessarily have the tools that you need to succeed. So we've got to work at the top and the bottom to ensure that we get better.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions from the committee? Let's continue, please.
Sure. And Madeline Zeich, Chief Human Resource Officer for DAS, will assist me in presenting the second budget note. And the second,
can I ask one more question really quick?
Sure.
One more. And Director, I don't expect you to answer this, but maybe you could get back to me. and again, I'm referring to that letter sent to the co-chairs on January 12th. It talks about the cost allocation system. What's the accuracy of that system? I'm assuming it's only as good as the data that's put into it. What's that accuracy rate?
Chair Smith, members of the committee, I don't have that information. I will have to get that information back to you. I will say that the issue surrounding our cost allocation system is sort of the way we use it. Only 2% of our transactions require the level of allocation that our current cost allocation system is designed for. Mm-hmm. So what we have to reconsider the way we allocate, the way we process those transactions so that the level of complexity associated with those transactions isn't beyond what it should be, to make it clearer.
And I appreciate it. The reason I ask that question is I go to bullet point three, it says limiting the use of the cost allocation system to only indirect expenditures would reduce the complexity of financial transactions mm-hmm. and increase the accuracy of financial reporting.
Right.
And so I'm trying to help our committee understand what does that mean to us?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's please continue. Sorry, I promise I won't interrupt again.
All right. The second budget note on the agenda requires DAS's assessment of how the Department of Revenue pursues certain personnel practices and how it manages legislatively authorized vacancies. The department had a significant number of vacant positions at the end of the last biennium, which triggered an inquiry into how we were managing our personnel efforts. Madeline Zeich, Chief Human Resources Officer, will provide the DAS perspective of our internal policies and personnel management and how it aligns with enterprise policy and expectations.
Okay. For the record, Madeline Zeich, Chief Human Resources Officer. Good afternoon, Co-Chair Smith and Manning, members of the committee. Like a good director, Ms. Director Koba kind of stole all my thunder and most of the things that I was going to say. So I'll probably be relatively brief as I provide you an overview of what we did with the Department of Revenue. As Director Ray said, we were asked to do a review, a comprehensive review of their personnel practices and their legislatively authorized position to achieve alignment between legislatively authorized positions and the use of their positions. This was a very collaborative effort. We spent many hours with revenue staff looking over not only their policies, but we thought we also needed to have teams looking at their labor relations policies and practices and their classifications and positions. I had three teams that completed that within the Chief Human Resources Office, and as we heard in the previous review, there were some improvements that we saw needed to be made. In particular, there were numerous changes to DOR policies, and the most significant were in the areas of position classifications and job rotations. So job rotations, there are really five reasons in state government for job rotations, as we call them. One is when covering or backfilling for an employee on leave. So someone goes out on medical leave, we bring someone in to fill in for them. Short-term transition and training, so someone's leaving for success. Session planning, we want to bring someone in to be cross-trained. Job sharing, when the total FTE is not more than one, so in other words, two people or more sharing a job. When we're awaiting a PICS role, so an administrative process for PICS, and then where there's a specific budget issue is directed by the CFO. So if George Naughton says, we need to have you do this, we do it. So those are job rotations in our system. The revenue was using this a little bit liberally, and so we told them they needed to adopt the DAS policy, which they have, and they've begun using that. That was one area of concern when we looked at their policies. Most of the policy changes that we recommended were indeed adopted by revenue and have been adopted. There were a few where they wanted to be more restrictive or conservative, however you would say, and it was something that we were okay with. For example, revenue, before someone can be in a job rotation, they like them to have completed their trial service. That's not a requirement for this CHRO, but we said, okay, if that's what what you want to do. It's kind of a philosophical difference. So when we looked at their policies, those are most of the things that we found. As I said, they've started to implement those changes. I think Director Ray is going to talk about some of the outcomes of that implementation later in your presentation.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah, please.
You presented a target of opportunity. Why on earth would we agree to job rotations prior to the completion of trial service?
Senator Johnson, members of the committee, I think it just depends on the business need. If we've got a really intense business need and we feel like someone has 80-90% of the skills, we might allow them to rotate into that before they've passed trial service. They have to go back and pass their trial service, but we might allow them to move into the job rotation as a developmental opportunity for them.
Then why didn't we hire them for that job?
Well, a lot of times they haven't applied for the job. The job wasn't necessarily open at that point. We spot a star, and we need to move them into that role.
Follow up?
Please.
I understand spotting a star. Trial service is to make sure there's a good fit between the applicant and state government. How often are we moving less than stellar?
Co-chair, Senator Johnson, I don't think often. I don't have any data on that, but these would be people that we're really looking toward for succession planning. Often they meet the MQs for that position, and they can apply for the position when it's open, but they do have to complete their trial service before they're permanently allowed to take that position.
Forgive me for looking incredulous, but I am. All of a sudden, somebody who hasn't completed trial service is now being eyeballed for succession planning. I'd be happy to take this offline with you, but that seems bizarre. I don't want to waste the committee's time.
Senator Johnson, I'd be happy to have that conversation with you.
Thank you, Senator. I need a 101 question answered.
Certainly.
At the most elementary level. On our vacant positions, we're fully advertising those, right, with WorkSource Oregon and all the means available for those positions?
Co-Chair Smith, members of the committee, we are advertising those vacancies anywhere we can think of to advertise them, including networking and word of mouth. We go to job fairs. We have a number of sites that we post those positions to on a regular basis, both electronically. We have people that go out with flyers at conferences, Craigslist, everywhere we can think of to post.
And I'm glad you share that. And Director Koba, you shared this. This is an issue throughout the entire state of Oregon. My goodness, you drive anywhere and there's signs out on every building saying, you know, folks wanted. I'm just curious because in the report it talks about there's going to be a strategy to change this. I'm not sure what your strategy is. And I think over the coming years, with many folks retiring out, it's going to become an even greater problem for us. And so as much as this is a Department of Revenue conversation today, I think this is a broader question for the entire state of Oregon and how we're going to manage this. And I don't know the answer on that, but I think we're going to have to figure out how to get our arms around it.
Co-Chair Smith, members of the committee, I was a lot younger when I took this job, believe me. This is something that keeps me up at night. We are, as Director Cobert said, having significant recruitment issues in all areas. One of the programs I thought of as I was sitting here listening a few minutes ago is our Chief Financial Office. They do have, it's not an internship program, but they hire less experienced budget analysts into appropriate classifications to start to scale them up. And that's been very successful. So I think some of the people you've seen in this room are individuals that have been through that program, and then the expansion of the internship program. But it truly is a problem, particularly when we have full employment, and we're competing with the private sector or other local entities that maybe have a benefits package that's more attractive to others at this point in their life, and we're competing for those same people. It truly is a challenge.
I'd share with you, I'm extraordinarily intrigued with that internship component. The only thing I'd worry about is that folks are coming in, getting experience, and heading out.
That's ODOT's experience.
Based upon building their resume. And I can see where a lot of college and graduate level students would be doing that. Mm-hmm. Representative Gomberg.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair, and good afternoon. Thank you for being here today. Yeah. The co-chair touched on a point that I see all too frequently, and that is there's help wanted signs everywhere, and the challenges that you're talking about in terms of filling positions are no surprise to me. Mm-hmm. That being said, and I've listened very carefully to you, in your letter of January 22nd, you referenced some of the changes that, that we've experienced, and you then summarized by saying that in July of last year, we had 118 vacancies within the department, and as of today, we've got about 100 vacancies. So we filled 18 out of 118 positions. Do you feel like we're making all the progress we could?
Co-Chair Smith, Representative Gomberg, I think Director Ray is going to talk a little bit about this. One of the things that we see is often people promote within state government. And so I believe, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, what's happening are people are promoting into other positions, leaving the one that they left vacant. So, you know, it doesn't look like the impact that it's made on the numbers. So. Cool. Yes. Did you want to answer that?
And chairs, members of the committee, we do have a slide here and we can advance to answer the representative's question. We're actually at roughly 40 vacancies. On the day that we issued the letter, we were at 100. But since that time, there have been a series of employment changes that have reduced the vacancy number fairly significantly. So,
60 people in the last month.
60 people in the last month, yes.
Who'd you steal them from? What agency did you steal?
Well, as you can see,
how do you do that?
Well, some of them, for example, we had several core systems replacement positions that were phased out. So that's 16. We filled 11 positions in January 2018. We have 32 active recruitments, so they're not filled, but they're on the street in the process of being filled. And then there were vacancies created due to retirement, promotions, other separations. 13 held vacant to manage to LAB. There are a few positions that need to be reconciled through the budget process that we are pursuing. So that brings us to a grand total of 40.
Just follow up, if I could, Mr. Chairman. And I apologize, I'm a little confused here. In my small company, my wife handles all the human resources. So explain this to me slowly. It looks to me like we're not filling positions, we're canceling debt instead of collecting the money. Did I say that right? We've got active recruitments, 32 out of the 40. So that's not bodies in-house, that is recruitments. We've got 14 positions that are held vacant. Are these real people doing real jobs, or are we moving paper around?
Co-chairs, members of the committee, I guess it certainly depends on your definition and your perspective. Our goal here was to show that, you know, as in last year this time, we had 171 vacancies that we really couldn't account for as well as this committee expected. And so we have taken the time and opportunity to, number one, identify where everyone is, what the vacancies are, and to really explain to this body how we're managing those vacancies and what they really mean. So, sure, there are 32 active recruitments. That does not mean that there are 32 individuals in place actively working within the department, but we're doing everything that we can to get them there, which is a different conversation than we were having with this body before. So that's
Senator.
I want to ask for clarity because both you and Ms. Koba stressed communication, and this presents an object lesson in communication. These are 32 for hire signs, or these are 32 people that have responded and are going through interview background check. I don't know the difference. If you've got active recruitments, and that just means help wanted signs, I don't think that it's appropriate to count those against your total vacancies. Some of those are going to turn us down. Some we're going to turn down. And I want the facts, ma'am, just the facts.
Chairs, members of the committee, that active recruitment label includes all of that. And so in order to satisfy your inquiry, we would have to get back to you with who's in what category. Active recruitments for the purpose of today means anything from a help wanted sign to a pending offer. So we've included all of that in active recruitment. Until an offer letter is issued and accepted, we're considering it an active recruitment.
Well, I might just make the comment then, this slide, and I don't think you tried to do it intentionally, but it's a little tiny bit misleading. And if one of our principal dilemmas at Department of Revenue is having bodies performing DOR work, a help wanted sign is not comforting to me. Out of that 32, what the probability the third of them will sign up, and or two thirds, or do you handicap it at all? Does HR handicap it at all?
Co-chairs, Senator Johnson, we don't. It really depends on the recruitment, as you said. One third might go through, two thirds, we might be lucky and we're able to sign them all up.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, shall I go ahead and continue?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, please. Okay. I actually feel for you, because I do economic development for a living. I'll just share this really quick, and I don't want to waste everyone's time here. At the Port of Morrow and in Hermiston, we had a major manufacturer. Ernst & Young out of Chicago came out and did multiple site visits. They wanted to enter into an agreement with them, and we just looked at the company and said, we can't fill your needs for labor. We actually turned the company away, and part of that was the impact it was going to have on existing companies already there. And this is a conversation we would not have had 5 years ago, but today there is such a labor shortage, we're more interested in protecting our current employers than we were in bringing in even more workers. So I mean, it's I hear you, and that's why I wanted to ask the question, are we advertising? And the answer is yes. We just can't find them, if I hear you correctly.
Right. That's correct in some circumstances. In some cases, we get a lot of applicants, but it's been a challenge. So I'm just about finished. I mentioned that there's still work to be done at Department of Revenue to achieve alignment to meet the intent of the budget note. They are working collaboratively with us. However, as Director Koba said, the majority of the work falls on the department, and I believe that Director Ray is going to talk about that a little bit and what they'll be doing moving forward. And then we still need to continue looking at the classifications within the Department of Revenue. I think you'll be hearing more of that moving forward, but that was part of what we were asked to look at too, our individuals, our positions in appropriate classifications to do the work that they are assigned to do. Just closing my part, they have done some work also around creating some internal audit, I would call it, although I'm not sure that's the appropriate term in HR, but some procedures to have some additional reports on things like double fills, approvals on double fills, more analysis on double fills, as I know that's a concern. So they have implemented some procedures on their end for doing that.
Can you take a moment? There's a few on the committee who may not genuinely understand the term double fill. Will you explain that to everyone?
Absolutely, Co-Chair Smith and members of the committee. So when an agency is funded for one position in our system for those reasons that I talked about earlier, they might have two people on that position for purposes of succession planning or short-term transition or some of those other things I said. So that's what we term a double fill. It is something I know that LFO frowns on. I think I'm correct there. And also, we don't encourage. So we have been working with agencies to remind them of that and remind them of the procedure in which double fills are acceptable.
So let me ask one more question on that. Based upon, while there might be a rationale for a double fill position, what's the average length of time a position should be double filled based on your personal experience?
Representative Smith and members of the committee, I think there are actually some rules around that.
Okay.
And I think it's not supposed to carry over a biennium or 2 years. I believe that they have to be reauthorized by the agency at that point. So it's not forever.
So and again, I'm just asking this for my own edification. So an agency, if they chose to, could actually run a double fill for 20, 21 months based upon when they started it, 22 months.
Representative Smith, members of the committee, that's correct.
Thank you. Got it. Okay. Please continue. I just wanted to learn that.
Okay.
So, Mr. Chair,
Representative. Sorry.
Thank you, Co-Chair. And I'm cognizant of your time concerns, so if I'm asking too many questions, you know, give me a nudge. But this is good stuff. I wanted to go back to page 11 again. And that was the sheet that we were just looking at with the vacancies. The vacancies that we have, whether there's 100 of them or 40 of them, are they spread equally throughout the department, or are they clustered in different subdivisions?
Chair, members of the committee, they are actually throughout the department. I will have to get back to you to determine what percentage is where, however. I don't recall there being a significant number in one area, but I would like to get some more information for you on that.
Okay, thank you.
Please All right. Thank you. So, with respect to DOR's response to DAS recommendations, understand that we, in addition to DAS's review, we did our own internal review to determine where we could better align with legislative and enterprise expectations. And so, Madeline briefly alluded to the modification of several policies. We modified our classification policy to clarify roles, to ensure that when classification decisions are made, the right people are at the table. Budget should be involved, program should be involved, HR at the department level and at the DAS level. So we've modified our policy to reflect that inclusion. We eliminated two of our policies, our hiring and temporary work assignment policy, and adopted DAS's policy as they were clearer and less restrictive. We've reduced the number of vacancies and double fills. The double fill slide here shows that we've reduced the job rotations by about 38% and the double fills by roughly 30 or 32%. That said, we still have some work to do on the reduction. It is an ongoing process, but we certainly heard the concerns from both DAS and the legislature about our use.
So really quick, Senator Johnson.
Back to the review of DOR is a good place to work. How are you explaining these to incumbents whose jobs are being changed around? I mean, some of these folks may be really happy with double fills and you're now reducing it. Some people may be using job rotations for all sorts of purposes, and now you're eliminating those. how are these changes being communicated to the workforce in order to minimize the amount of angst and perhaps acceleration in difficulties in terms of personnel satisfaction in the agency?
Chairs, members of the committee, the use, and I don't want to, please, I don't want to speak for DASC, so if I speak in error, please inform. The use of job rotations and double fills in general is not frowned upon. It can be an effective management tool. The problem we found as a department was that we hadn't necessarily documented our double fills and our job rotations to effectively track, you know, how long an individual, for example, had been in a double fill position or who authorized it or just where it was in the process. So some of the elimination is just basic cleanup. With respect to managing the expectations within the department, the goal here was not to disenfranchise any staff or any individual that would be attracted to a position within the Department of Revenue. Double fills are largely used when there's a need. And there's typically an expectation when a double filled is assigned that either an individual will stay in that position for a certain amount of time, or it should occur that way, or they will remain in the position. And so it's a matter of us really ensuring that the expectations are set going in so that we don't have a situation where, you know, individuals are disappointed, or where we do, we're adequately able to address that.
Thank you.
Please continue.
So we modified several policies, made every attempt to reduce vacancies to appropriately impact our job rotation and double fill numbers. And what we found here, much like the finance management budget note, is there just needs to be increased communication internally about many of our practices, externally about many of our practices, and better documentation, ensuring that we know what's going on within our department. And so we are making every effort to ensure that the message is clear cross-agency that needs to occur.
Any questions? All righty.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, I forgot we have one more slide. I ended too quickly. We will be presenting several positions, our budget and authorized positions, into bringing our budget and authorized positions into closer alignment with the resources needed to maintain current activities. Part of the budget note was to rectify a misalignment of positions, and so we are bringing a request, or have brought a request, to the attention of this body to align our current position structure so it meets that intent, and you'll hear more about that on Wednesday.
Perfect. You know, it's interesting. I'd share with you earlier today, I had a chance to visit with the co-chair and with Mr. Borden, and one of the questions I asked are, you know, are you getting good information? And I have to share with you this report on, or the letter from January 22nd, 2018, and review of personal practices and legislatively authorized positions. It's pretty detailed. And I mean, there's some hard-hitting facts in here that obviously you realize you have to address, and I really appreciate the candor on this and your willingness to work with us on this. I would encourage all of us colleagues to go through and read what's being shared, digest it, and be prepared to keep having conversations. But Madam Director, this is good, and I appreciate it. It's great to have forthright information acknowledging where some of our short are and what we're going to do to correct them, and where our strengths lie and where we're going to build on. So I appreciate that.
Chair, members of the committee, a director is only as good as her staff, and I have an awesome staff.
I can tell you, in 18 years on Ways and Means, I've only seen two or three reports that are this hard-hitting brought forward by an agency where you acknowledge areas for improvement, and so I appreciate that. So thank you. All righty, what else do we have? Anything else you want to share with us?
Chair, members of the committee, I have exhausted the level of information I have on these issues.
There's a lot in here. Okay. John, what do we need to know? Anything we need to be prepared for?
No, Mr. Co-Chair. On Wednesday will be the work sessions of these two particular items, as well as some additional work for the subcommittee.
Perfect.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair.
All right. Mr. Co-Chair, anything else?
Thank you.
All righty. Well, again, colleagues, I would encourage everyone, if you haven't already done so, to really read through this, because there's good information in there and lots of good recommendations. All right, anything else for the good of the order? All right, we're going to wrap up. Everyone have a wonderful day, and we're adjourned.
34 to go.